Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What a fucking team tune, lads. Thanks to the boys. Thanks to Conor Dalton, Ghetto Amaretto there for the team tune as always. Love to give the lads a shout out. And welcome to this week's Snugcast here from Grady's Yard. I'm your host, DJ Walsh. Joins our co-host, Owen Tabb, sitting diagonally away from me there in the corner of the table. How are you getting on?
Choo-choo. Welcome aboard the Snugcast train. I'm your captain tonight, Owen Tabb.
I know we don't prepare much, but I was not prepared for that. We're here in Grady's Yard, the home of Yellow Belly Beer, and Smurf is drinking Yellow Belly tonight. So, joined tonight by Sean Murphy, Thursday Thursday Show, also curator of the Rogue Art Galleries.
I've too many things going on, man.
So he's Thursday Show, the Comedy Club at the Rogue Art Gallery and Studios, which I partook in there last month. Most horrifying experience in my life. And also tonight we're joined by Ollie Sharp, who has no specific talents or skills. Ollie, welcome back on the Snugcast. It's been a while, man.
It's good to be here. It's been almost 6 months.
No, it's been about three. We've only been going 6 months. Yeah, it's been about three months. Anyway. Listen, lads, we're here delighted to be joined tonight by the lads. Thanks a million for coming along. We're actually a couple of points in, not just a 1 point in now, because we're watching Man United and Barcelona. So we were actually joking, myself and Smurf, there before we came on air about the fact that he only ever seems to come on in big European Champions League nights.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, man for the big occasion as ever. I'll just go and take a little sip in of my drink.
The last time we were doing it, we was down in Tully's, and it was Liverpool and Munich were playing. It was the first leg, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's still funny listening to it, because you can literally hear us at stage, and they're going, that's great. Yeah. And we're all just leaning there watching it.
I love that. There's like a silence at one point, and all you get is, he's on it. You're just about to speak, so it's almost like you have your own team tune, which is the Champions League team, is it? The Champions League.
Well, boys, thanks, Murph. I think if I had a team tune, it'd have to be more like something like Fugazi or something kind of weird,
Rocky, something funky, something abnormal. Anyway,
yeah,
that's complex.
Like yourself. I've been called worse this week, yeah. So
possibly, yeah. So first of all, Owen, I'm going to come at you first. You don't know, do you?
No, I don't.
It's like last week all over, 2 weeks ago all over again. Owen, here at Grady's Yard, what are you drinking tonight?
I don't know. No, I'm on O Brother Brewing Company, and it's our Elements drink, and it is a 4%er sour vicey. It's fucking delish.
I accidentally was drinking it there.
I was accidentally drinking it. We've some palates.
Oh yeah. Well, actually, because I took a sip and I was like, that's a lot sour, and I remember it. it's actually lovely, very crisp.
Yeah.
For a sour, like, and I love that about the Castaway as well. Like, I love a sour that has a really clean, crisp finish that just leaves your palate a bit dry. makes you want to go back for more, similar to a Blues IPA in that sense, like, it's really, really good.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a, you know, the kind of sour wine gums.
Oh yeah.
kind of like them though. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A Corona version.
Alcoholic version of them.
It's a good job we put explicit on this podcast. Yeah, it's really, really nice. I'll go next because I'm actually also on an O'Brother. I'm on the Dreamcatcher New England style IPA. It's our New England style pale ale. It's very, very fruity, very citrus. So they use Citra hops, Simcoe hops, and they use the Mandarina Bavaria hops as well. So you get this like
Mandarina.
You get this bang of orange at the start, and then it's like this little bitter grapefruit fucking comes in. So it leaves it like taste buds tingling. Did you get that at all when you didn't realise you weren't drinking a sour?
Well, I kind of got more of the Maynards a bit, you know, the Maynards.
Yeah. Maynards wine gums. it's a fucking delicious drink. 4.7% is fairly sessionable now. I thought the last one I was having, yeah, it was a bit strong toward the end, but I'm absolutely loving it. Yes, it's a Wednesday, so it's getting me over the midweek hump. Here, Ollie, have a little sip in and tell me what you think of it.
I definitely taste that mandarina inside there. It's just unreal.
Smurf, what do you make of that? Like ancient Irish kings were sharing wives, like sharing pints.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, like the sweetness comes into it, and then there's just that little bit.
Yeah, a little bitter at the end,
yeah. Which is a nice kind of contrast.
Lovely contrast on the taste buds there. And Smurf, you're going for the classic.
Classic, the Citra Pale Ale.
It's ghastly. You ordered it earlier, Michal said, fuck me, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
And that's the way I deal with it, like, whenever I come in. Like, I love going through the board and trying out different things and that, but then, like, you know, you have to go back to a classic then every now and again. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And it is, you know, it's one of those points that, well, you know, but even anyone I bring in here, and they're not sure what to be, I say, start with that.
Yeah,
and exactly. Then you work your way.
Do you know what? Like,
it's most kind of like the top macros, like, you know, it's kind of like it, but just way tastier.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like the Citra. So I find Keller is a bridge for lagers into craft beer.
Yeah.
And the beauty of Citra is it adjusts your palate for that fruitier, more fragrant type of drink. It's what I drink when I'm not doing the podcast here. Like, if I come in, like, I'll be in here Saturday evening now this week,
yeah,
and I'll probably have a couple of Citras, unless something really stands out to me. You don't have Grand Parade anymore. Like, I'd go for that.
Yeah.
We were in here over Christmas at one stage, we bumped into each other, and I was Grand Parade.
I mean, Dragon Place Joy of us,
listen, like, I came in for one on the way home and ended up drinking about fucking 9 Grand Parades and tried to run 5K the next day with Simon. I was in bits. But,
I was talking to me all in Barner, and he was saying that he's like, sure, lads, there should only be one stout on top now. Stout season is finished.
Yeah.
It's like daylight savings time. Like, you fucking change your taps. When the taps go forward, you change the taps.
It's kind of saison fruit IPA season now.
A few sours.
That kind of genre.
It's kind of lighty, fruity. Like,
And game changer. I was at a wedding on Saturday. I had a couple of heavy weekends last few weekends. Was on cider for a night. Did me grand. Change it up.
It's the thing of I say when I started drinking, I should nearly have socks in the Heineken family for the amount of it that I bought at the time. And then from that I went to cider. I was on cider for a long time, and now I just can't.
Yeah.
I mean, even craft stuff, I wouldn't mind, like, half.
What was your cider typically back in the day?
I was Bulldogs, like, you know what I mean?
So. You didn't go to the
culture. I wasn't culture.
The old Clonmel champagne.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go with, like, fucking Devil's Hater or something.
Oh, really? Oh, Jesus Christ. What was the plant you used to be able to get? Was a Scumpy Jack or something?
You get Scumpy Jack, Druids Glen.
Oh,
the classics.
Yeah, it's
so, Ollie Sharp, last but not least, what are you drinking tonight?
Killer Brewing Company's Monty Python Full of Hops. It's actually very tasty. I couldn't believe it when I was having a look. I tried out a few different beers, and this one really stood out to me.
It's definitely the darkest of our beers, anyway. Isn't it?
Can I have another sip lean there?
Sure, of course.
Oh, it smells pungent. Don't know what that goes.
Unlike yourself.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth there. Like, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, no, it's different. Like,
it's sort of hopping.
Yeah.
All the hops, is it?
Different from what I'm usually used to in my midweek drinking both in Galway, but
there's a couple of little sour notes in there as well, like, you know.
Is it one of those ones that's so full of hops now that kind of closes your right eye?
No, definitely not. There's no whiplash. Speaking of which, shout out to the lads at Whiplash. They're opening a new brewery on July 13th, and also Dungarvan Brewing Company turned 9 this week.
I didn't know.
Yeah, turned 9. They're not old enough to drink yet. They're halfway there. They turned 9 this week. I saw there on social media. So
is that 9 from the time that they've brewed, or time like 9 from the time that they like started brewing?
Yeah. You'd have to ask them yourself. Should we ask them? I presume it's release date or something like that. So yeah, that's what we're drinking tonight. And we're here, we've Mike Smurf on tonight. Happy to have him on anytime. But specifically, people who are loyal listeners to Snowcast, the last time you would have heard Smurf on with us would have known that he announced the launch of the new comedy night here in Waterford at the Rogue Art Gallery and Studios. And I took part in the first one actually there in April, and
I thought you had a savage set, man. I thought it was really good. Like,
thank you. I was bricking it. Never been more nervous than in my life. We were having a brief chat off air, and we'll get into it a little bit. Stand-up comedy. It's the first time I ever did it, and the way I described myself beforehand is a bag of nerves. Now, I don't get nervous for anything. Anyone who knows me knows I'm not a nervous individual. I'll take something in my stride because I won't be arsed about most things that I do.
Yeah.
But what happened was, you invited me on after we recorded that night, and I said I'd do it.
Yeah.
Completely forgot about it until the day before, and then was bricking it for the whole day. And even like Niamh said it to me, like people in work were saying to me, like, what are you going to talk about? I hadn't a fucking clue. I was bricking it. But I have to say, like, you put on a fantastic show. You were a brilliant host of the night. Like, made me feel at ease, which is fucking, I needed it at the time. And I think I was on second or third.
Second, I think.
I needed to be on early.
Yeah.
Because actually, when you were telling me when I was on, if you were telling me I was going to be towards the end, I would have asked to be bumped up.
Yeah.
I was nervous.
It's the whole thing of, like, kind of the way that night is set up for anyone. Kind of not sure of it. It is set towards people that haven't done stand up before, or, you know, trying to help develop kind of more comedians within Waterford and stuff like that, and trying to get different heads in to do it. So, like, a major part of what I actually was like what you said, is I'm going in there before and I'm setting up the room and, like, you know, PA system and getting the lineup done. But, like, a lot of it is going in simply by side, that's going, well, how are you getting on? How are you fixed for this? Like, are you up for it? And all that kind of stuff. They're going, oh, like, you know, like, hey, man, don't worry about it. You know, it's all okay. Like, I found that's kind of put it down to you now. I found that's a huge part of it, just kind of getting people a little bit set before it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I felt when I stood up first, like, my heart was racing and I was sweating profusely, and I had, like, I'm not one for one-liners, like, in terms of stand-up comedy. I've only ever done one gig, so I can't say, like, I'm one for one or another.
Yeah.
But, like, in a conversation to and fro, I'll deliver a one-liner, I'll give a little retort or something.
Yeah.
But it's a completely different style of comedy. It's a completely different style of being funny.
That's just you're on your own, but you're the only one who's in that conversation.
Yeah. This is the thing.
I've always described it as tightrope walking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it is that kind of thing of, like, there's also the notion that the whole reason why you're doing it is you're the person that stood up in front of everyone and they're basically saying, I'm the funniest person in the room. Listen to me now.
No, I was that night, like, I'm only joking. But, like, I have to say, like, do you know what they say when you're giving a speech or whatever, you should envisage the audience of naked. I'm not gonna lie. I didn't. Maybe a little
nervous.
No.
So that's why he wasn't getting home.
Maybe a little nervous semi. But I did feel bollock naked when I stood up there myself. And I was a bit like, fuck, I'm exposed. But I gave my first little spiel and got a good laugh, and it just settled me.
It must give you a real sense of confidence.
It kind of goes two ways, because with the performer, getting that first laugh is settling. You always see it, everyone's shoulders just relax and they get into more of a flow. But it's also kind of a thing for the audience as well, because what kind of tends to happen to a lot of lads when they go to do their first gig or whatever, they have the funniest story that's ever happened to them ever. And they'll tell this whole story, but they'll spend a minute and a half setting it up, and there's no jokes. So everyone's kind of sitting there going, this is interesting, but, you know, can you give me a fucking punchline? Yeah, whereas I always say, if you get in the first 10, 15 seconds and just get a joke there and get a laugh, everyone in the audience is the same thing. They sit back and go, all right, this guy's funny.
Yeah. Because I found, my set for the 5-6 minutes that I did was a bit like little mini stories that kind of bridged into each other, and I tried to close the loop that linked them all together.
Yeah.
And I found the first little story, it had to be very short and sharp, because you, in fairness, like, you would give me that advice beforehand, because I text you that week, in the week preceding, being like, a bit nervous what you recommend or whatever, or the day before actually, because I'd forgotten. And you just basically said, make sure you get a joke in the first 15 seconds. Yeah. And that was grand. I did an exaggerated Cork accent of my mother, and everyone laughed at it. And it was just like, right, I can fucking do this now.
Yeah.
And then I actually got such a thrill out of it, I finished my set early, so I had to come up with a Pele Viagra joke on the spot, kind of in my time. But like, I really, really enjoyed it. You had the second night on Monday. Unfortunately, I wasn't available to go, and even be in the crowd. So how did you get on?
Well, we flew it, like, the room was full. I've even met people as we come in here tonight who were up there. They said it was great, and they want to see more of it. It's great that it's happening in Waterford, which is the biggest thing that I'm really going after. The thing that I found now, we sat down, me and Jamie, who is the person who runs the gallery, and we kind of talked about what kind of issues we're coming up against. And we said the best thing is we're not fixing any problems at the moment. The night runs perfectly. Everyone's coming in, is having a good time. We have a nice set up the way we want to do things and all that. The only thing that we're missing now is just more people to get up on stage. Yeah. That's what we want now. Well, that's the next step, is to get kind of a gang of about, we said about 10 people regular who will just always be there.
Yeah. I said it to you now, even the next day that is announced is the 13th of May, and I'd encourage anyone that listens to this that's in the area and has any ever thought of doing, like, ever been interested in doing a stand-up, 100% do it. Like, I had no fucking inclinations of doing it before. I always said, oh, you'd always have, I think everyone has this little spark in their mind to say, would I be good at that? Would I be able to do that? And I really enjoyed it. Now, I'm not around the next one, which is a shame, because I'll 100% do it anytime I'm there again.
It's the thing I say to anyone that, like, has kind of half the inclination to it. More of what stand-up is the want to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, that's more than, like, because, like, it's kind of, it's a bit different to, like, going playing a gig where you're singing and stuff like that. There's a lot kind of effort into that. But, like, with stand-up, it's you and your own, like, you're the production manager, you're the director, you're the writer, you know what I mean? So if you want to do it, you'll do all that work.
I find myself thinking of things now and being like, fuck, I must remember that now if I'm not for next time. Officially, yes.
When's Netflix
version? Look, we'll discuss that when we're negotiating the documentary with him as well. So yeah, Ollie, your take on stand-up comedy. I mean, I know you've never performed it, but I suppose as an entertainment form, what do you make of it?
I'm a huge fan of it. I do listen. Netflix obviously have their stand-up comedy specials with Jimmy Carr, Kevin Hart, all the boys.
Like, Dave Chappelle is on it.
Frankie Boyle. Yeah. Dave Chappelle is huge. Anthony Jeselnik is very funny. Like, a lot of these lads, they can be dark enough, but they're often funny. Like, you know, they have a different kind of humour to what you might see in your mainstream kind of Michael McIntyre kind of comedy roadshow.
Yeah.
But they're funny, like, they laugh at the darker things in life.
I've always said it, the best stand-up comedy comes from something that you would never think you would laugh at.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a video out at the moment of Joey Diaz, who's, like, it is honestly, have you seen this?
I know Joey Diaz, it's very funny.
He most recently, and I'm ruining the thing or whatever, because the second you start watching, if you know anything about him, it's a story about his mom dying.
Yeah.
And it's a 10-minute bit, and it is one of the most perfect pieces of stand-up comedy I've ever seen, because it takes something that is probably the darkest, most horrible thing that ever happened to him. And that's what I think is, like, the core of what stand-up comedy should be.
It's such a widely available thing as well. Like, isn't, you see, like, Joe Rogan, who's a UFC commentator, and he's well able to stand up on stage and produce an hour long special. And it's just, it's funny. Like, isn't, he's a good writer, and just kind of proves that anyone with a few ideas and put a joke or two together can.
It's funny. It's something I never thought I'd get into, and it's something I really enjoyed. And I'm actually, I'm going up to Dublin with you in a couple of weeks as well, to do a little tiny setup there, another quick one.
Yeah.
You asked me what I do it. I was a bit kind of like, Becky, it's midweek, will I be able to get up, won't I? On my mind, I'll go up, it'll be an experience. And that's what I've loved about it, is it's an experience. It's something that, it's an experience I didn't know I'd ever have. Ollie, if you were, I'm not asking to do stand-up comedy, but if you were to be a stand-up comedy, whose style do you think you'd most mimic?
I'd like to think I'd be very Anthony Jeselnik. It's very dark and deep and monotone and very like, yes, some weird comedy, but it's, I just find it quite funny. I think I find dark
that's
humor,
your niche, is it? That's
I
your style,
find
yeah.
Dark humor very funny, but like, I'd like to think I'd be very Dave Chappelle, where it's like he just takes this whole genre of comedy and just absolutely destroys it. Like, it's fantastic.
It's always fighting when I'm running the gigs now. You'll have people come in, they're talking to me about their writing and stuff, and people come up to me and they're like, I have this stuff, it's like Caricatures of Robert Jackson or
so funny.
Or any other stuff like that. Like, is that too dark? And I'm like, I'm hosting it. Grand. I'm going to do worse. I'm going to do way
absolutely.
Worse.
Oh, and I'm going to ask you the exact same question I just asked Ollie. What's if you were to do stand-up comedy, what style of comedian do you think you'd be in the mold of?
Probably Jimmy Carr, deadpan delivery, like
one-liners.
Yeah.
Living off your laugh.
Yeah. No, I don't have. but yeah, no, I think I do like a good one-liner, but like I think again, as you were saying there about like it is a completely different setup to like a conversation where like you're vibing off somebody else and you know you can like respond to what somebody else says and get a dig in on what they said and like you know give a funny pun or one-liner back to them. Whereas it's you setting up the joke and like delivering the punchline, like you know, it's you know telling your story, so you're the whole time talking like.
Yeah, do you know what the irony is? When I spoke to people say that we work with or that I know, and I was telling them, well, actually, I'll tell you a funny one. The day that I did the gig, right? I didn't tell you this. I told you this one. I haven't told Ali this. The day that I was doing it, my mother rang me after I finished work that day, and she was like, "Oh, what are you doing tonight?" And I was like, "Actually, doing a stand-up comedy gig tonight." And she was kind of like, "Fuck off!" And I was like, "No, actually, I genuinely am." And her exact words were, "Why are you doing that? You'll probably get booed off the stage." Thanks, ma'am. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
But that's the mad thing is, I remember the very first gig that I went and done, 4 or 5 years ago now. My girlfriend at the time, exact same thing. She was like, "Why are you doing that?" I'm like, "Because I really want to do something interesting." She's like, "But you're not like that funny." I was like, "Me and you are going to fuck up."
Yeah. Like, that's why she was your girlfriend.
Yeah.
But even when I told Neva I was doing it, she just kind of looked at me and went, "Really? I'm not surprised."
It's kind of a weird thing to get involved in, though. Like, it's so strange to say, like, I'm going to do a stand-up gig tonight. Like, on, you know, I'm out of the blue.
I think, do you know what? I'm going to say something that might be a bit controversial, a bit generalising of stand-up comedians. And anyone who knows me might know this about me, but I'm actually, like, deep down, I'm a very insecure person. Like, very insecure. Yeah, like but, you know, I do. I have massive insecure. And I think that's the thing with stand-up comedians are... I'd imagine a lot of them are people who are superficially quite confident but have their very much their own insecurities, and it's almost like nearly in a way the bravest thing you can do.
It's the whole thing of everyone saying, "What's a stand-up comedian really saying?" They're actually on stage going, look at me, do you like me, you know what I mean? It is, and it's so true, like 99% of they go on stage and they're these larger than life personalities, and then they come off stage and first, it happens to me, I happily say it to anyone, before I walk on stage, like if you walked up to me about 20 seconds before I went on doing the set and said something to me that I didn't like, I might hit my chest. You know what I mean? I might actually go for you.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, at that stage, I myself so wound up, I'm like, I'm the baddest motherfucker in the world. These people are always going to have to. But on the flip side of that, when I walk off stage, I fall to pieces as a person. I crumble. And I'm literally running off, like, half run outside, smoke 2 cigarettes and be like, "Did everyone like that? Was that okay?" You know what
I mean? Like you said, I think there was a good few acts on the night that I was there, and I found the next 3 or 4 after me, I didn't take Anthony in. I was just a bit fucking emotionally wrecked. But I'd highly recommend anyone to get involved with it. I've really enjoyed that introduction. And we actually have something different that we haven't done before coming up for the next segment. But first, a word from tonight's sponsors. Are you going to Magaluf with the lads this summer? Going to party hard and love someone a long time?
Want to buy a bar?
Chantalini here, lads, and let's see.
if you need a loan immediately and with total discretion that no one will know about, you can hit us up and make sure that you get your Delaney Finance.
Delaney Loans, no delays. Delaney Finance Limited. 2004% APR. Regulated by the Central Bank of Delaney.
Ding dong, the witches.
we are recording on Maggie Day.
Happy Maggie Day.
Cheers, lads. Cheers. Not Maggie a boo anyway, she's not a boo. Yeah. She's in the mud. You're welcome. Just having a sip there. So actually there's something that cropped up on so social media, it's a fantastic aspect of society. You can keep in touch with people all over the world. Flip side is, it's fucking one of the worst things in the world. You can't go 10 minutes without checking your phone to see what your social media update is. But for the likes of us now, it's great getting a podcast out there and stuff like that. So in social media in the last week, there has been a thread put up on Twitter that I think is fascinating and makes some excellent points, and that's what I want to discuss on tonight's podcast. Now, we've spoken for 20 minutes about comedy and beers and stuff like that already, so it's not like the mainstay of the podcast nearly at this stage, but we go through it anyway. So Casey Explosion, so it's at Casey Explosion on
good Twitter handle.
So a good few of our listeners who are probably into their beers and stuff and follow the brewery, the craft beer breweries and stuff like that on Twitter, may have come across or come across this during the week. So basically it's a thread, so I'll call it out to you and we can talk about it then. So Casey Explosion tweeted on the 7th of the 4th, which was Sunday, hey folks, today let's talk about beer, or more specifically that beverage that's almost synonymous with Ireland itself, Guinness. It's such a big deal that it briefly enjoyed its own holiday, Arthur's Day, in celebration of Arthur Guinness and the beer itself. Now, to put you in the right frame of reference for this thread, I'll have to tell you about what it's like drinking in Ireland. We've been having quite a craft beer boom in recent years. Independent bars and breweries have been popping up everywhere, which is great. We're in one right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can't underpin how recent a development that was, because when I started drinking, none of that existed. You could go into any bar in Ireland and they had the same selection on tap. Guinness, Middix, Carlsberg and Bulmers, sometimes Budweiser if you're lucky, or unlucky depending on what side of the fence you sit on. Now you're probably thinking, but Casey, you're not that old, aren't you a millennial? And you're right, first craft pub opened in my city in 2005, and it would be years before most pubs stocked even a small selection of craft beer or even some different from the usual. Before the craft boom, you really didn't have much choice at all. If you drank Smiddix, that's owned by Guinness. They bought Smiddix back in the 60s. Depending on your corner of the country, you get something more regional such as Harp, but no, that's Guinness too. I remember one time I was in a pub at the countryside and they bought a McCardell's, but that too was Guinness, and they bought McCardell's too. Story familiar to everyone watching the video game industry, Guinness later shut down McCardell's. You see, Guinness is a bit of a monster. You all know Electronic Arts keep buying up then killing off game studios. That's what Guinness have been doing in Ireland over the past century, buying up and shutting down breweries. Guinness didn't get to be a product synonymous with an entire country by playing fair. They didn't get there because their product's any good either. It's because they bought out and shut down the competition so they could enjoy nearly the whole market to themselves. Unless you were a massive corporation with loads of money like Heineken, who bought up the likes of Murphy's, you simply couldn't compete in the Irish market. Bulmers, known as Magners outside of Ireland, has control of the other market. So that brings us back to Arthur's Day in 2009. Guinness on their own holiday, massive advertising push, so everyone was encouraged to drink Guinness on Arthur's Day. It was eventually stopped for the least surprising reasons. Who would have thought that a holiday dedicated to alcohol consumption would have resulted in a rise in alcohol-related illness and death? But Guinness sold more beer, so hurrah for that, I guess. And there's actually a link to an independent article from the time where a doctor said it's linked to more deaths and around the time from alcohol-related stuff. In 97, Guinness merged the UK company Grand Metropolitan to form Diageo, doing everything from Smirnoff to Captain Morgan to Johnny Walker to Baileys and its quite an empire. Perhaps you might think that maybe a massive corporation shouldn't be able to just up and declare their own holiday dedicated to themselves, but there's absolutely nothing to say they can't. Nothing sort of the way Guinness making Arthur's 18. Corporations, they're a bit shit, aren't they? Discuss.
He makes a load of brilliant points there that, like, Guinness do kind of have a monopoly.
Yeah.
And they nearly almost do it only because, and only for the rise in kind of independent breweries and stuff like that, it is fair to say that there is kind of a competition there for them, but it's something. It's a new challenge for them, because before they would have just bought people out. Now they seemingly, they can't just buy people out because people want to know, this is like my pet project, this is what I put my life into, I'm not selling it. Like, do you know what I mean? I want to push it on further. And that's where they've gotten from public, basically.
Yeah.
An approach with things that have been popular. In regards to the holiday, like an Arthur's Day, when that first came out, I said that's just a promotional tool, and I think that got beyond their control, almost.
Probably, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When they initially came up with the idea, that's the way I would have looked at it, because if they could have sold 2 points against someone who wouldn't buy a pint of Guinness all year, and they've done that in pubs all around the country, I think that was more kind of their angle.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, having this what turned into absolute mayhem.
Yeah. I'm not 100% certain Dave Arthur's. I'm not going to defend Guinness at all, because my position is, I think, you know, there's a couple of the tread, 90% of the tread, I think, is absolutely fantastic and hits a nail on the head. I don't think Guinness is a terrible drink, which was mentioned in the trailer.
No,
in fact, if you get a good Guinness, it's lovely.
Yeah.
I actually, on the Snowcast Twitter, I did reply to it in one sense and said, you know, who said Guinness, I agree with you everything you said, but Guinness isn't a shit drink. And I did say, it's probably not a shit drink when you get a good one, but I personally think of all those like macro stouts that you can get in Ireland, Beamish is probably the best one there. Mm-hmm. But then I did turn around and say, there are like the Midaza from Rising Suns, and some other nitro stouts that are out there. Left Hand Brewing from Colorado, it's not an Irish one, but from Colorado, it's fantastic, probably my favourite stout of all. Mm-hmm. And then like come close to home or near the Captain Sable here in Grady's Yard, Yellow Belly Bears chocolate and coffee stout, my mind's gone, what's it called again?
Breakfast stout?
No, not the breakfast stout, the snooze button, what's the one when, fuck me, why is my mind gone blank? It is called Captain Stable. Sorry, what? I don't know what happened to me there. Captain Stable is a fucking delicious stout, but it's different than nitro stout. You have to expect that. But Arthur's Day, for me, I don't think it sold more. I don't think it converted more people to Guinness. Because I remember Arthur's Day coming out back in the day. We were in college at the time, and if I was drinking lager at the time, I was on lager that day. Do you know what I mean? So. But the flip side is then Guinness probably owned that lager company. Diageo probably owned that lager company. Oh, and what's your thoughts on trade?
I don't know. Like, business is business, really, right? So I did a few startup business course before that, right? And there was a company on that who were a brewery, and their exit strategy was being bought out by the company. You know, you can say all you want about big business or about passion projects or whatever, but if you're getting a cash in your hand, like, you know, if you're getting a big payout, like, you know, fuck that, like, I can go off and make another company.
Yeah. But if Diageo are going to buy you for $500,000, what's that 10 years wages to a well-paid person? Do you know what I mean?
I know, but I'm just...
it's a very valid point.
The other kind of point I would make is, like, you know, there is, like, so there is a lot of companies extra, it's just like being bought by a big corporate conglomerate, like, but also the point that I'd have to make, and like, I don't want to be sitting here and saying like I'm defending Guinness or whatever, but I understand where they're coming from, because at the end of the day, it didn't happen by accident.
No.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like Guinness ducked out. And they, like, even in the early 60s and 70s, heavily promoted and went into advertising in ways that other companies didn't. Some of their advertising
But you still come across, when you go to rural Ireland, you still come across some of their advertising from back in the day.
Yeah.
And it is very, very good.
They were years ahead of a lot of companies based within Ireland.
So, which brings me, I'm watching Mad Men at the moment, which is obviously all about advertising in the 50s in Manhattan. And I'm into series 3 now, and like, I just think Guinness hit the nail on the head with so much. And again, like that, I'm not going to defend them. I am going to say they do give Ireland a very good reputation abroad, and there's another thing I want to come on to in a minute, but I'd say, right, myself, Owen, Smurf, we're all in and around the 30 bracket, like, me and Owen were 28, Smurf, you're 25.
I look way worse though.
Oh no, you're Graham, your brother is 28,
isn't it?
27, 28, yeah. So, we're in of our generation. Ollie, you're 9 years younger than us.
I'm 21 in May.
No, this thing I've always said is I look like this because I drank and smoked heavily in my teenage years, and I've continued to do so in my late 20s. So
perfect. I've looked 50 since I was about 18. Sorry. But Ollie, you're a bit behind us, so you're basically a different. I just hit my microphone, by the way. Sorry if that made noise. Ollie, you're a bit behind our generation. You're nearly the next generation.
Well,
what's your take on Guinness, Diageo, and corporatization of the world?
I've kind of grown up and just seeing Guinness as the number one stout, but as in my uncle worked for Murphy's back in the day, and I have there's plenty of Murphy's merchandise in the house at home. Like, I never knew much about it, but like, it's just like, obviously Guinness have tried to enter themselves into the smaller brewing market, and they've tried to capitalise on different types of brew, like brewing, so like they could have hop house,
like their own stuff, like
hop house is their version of like what, a real hoppy lager, like, do you know
what I mean? Yeah, I mean like Guinness are the only group to kind of do that. Like, you would have seen like Q4 advertised in places. So that's developed by Heineken.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's why there's no information online and product placement of it online.
That is,
I mean,
my biggest gripe with the macro beer industry is they're trying to outcraft the craft beer industry.
Well,
and I'm just thinking, you have such a market share, just fucking let the craft lads do their thing.
That's not how capitalism works.
Yeah.
It's not how it works.
And clearly your gripe is more with capitalism more so than the macro brewing industry.
Absolutely.
Because,
like, say for example, we, this is not us self-promoting, but it's genuinely how we feel about things, and it's why we get involved with these kind of things. For example, we're doing our videos at Arakeen and Quality Food Sources at the moment, who mostly support local produce law, and you have to pay an extra pound or an extra £2 for some of the stuff, and I get it, not everyone's in a position to pay that, and not everyone's in a position to go to Arakeen and buy a product that's been produced in Waterford that cost €1 more than the same product would cost them in Tesco that's been mass produced somewhere else in Tesco's. I fully respect that, and I'm not saying, but say for example, if you are a person in a position where you can afford an extra fucking euro for a pesto, then go support the pure food company. Support Kian, who's local here.
I think you're whatever about locality or whatever, right? You're paying for quality, right?
Yeah.
Like you're paying for that better pesto, right? Like, pints here taste nicer, like, than a fucking Heineken or whatever. Like, you know, so like I know what you're saying. They're buying out some of those other ones, but like, sometimes they're diminishing the quality then because they're so focused on profits on those products then that they're cheaping out on the raw materials of them, you know?
Absolutely, but it comes down to the thing of the people who are making those decisions. They're not the ones standing in breweries looking at mixes being done. They're the ones looking at spreadsheets and percentages.
Yeah.
And that's an excellent point.
You know what I mean? So the guy who's in the brewery actually, like, say there's aggressive buyout of a small microbrewery by kind of like a big company like Diageo or anything, or any of those ones. Like, the guy who's making those decisions is not the fella who's standing in the factory, it's the fella who's standing in.
I completely get on with that. And when I grew up in Cork, like, the Heineken Brewery and the Breamish Crawford Brewery were like huge employers in the local area. And I fully get behind that aspect of it. But it's no surprise that, like, say, myself and Owen, like, craft beer was something that we only experienced in Tully's and Philly Ryan's, and we weren't hugely into it, but we definitely were, like Jack Cody's Puckwinsor for us was the fucking holy grail, and I know he's shut down since. We used to go to Philly's, drink Puckwinsor, and, like, granted, you'd go to the other bars and have the macro stuff, but there was always a reason why Philly's was our favourite. And we weren't, like, engrossed in the craft beer industry like we are now at that time. But like you said, it's quality over quantity in a sense, and that quality shone through, and that superior drink shone through.
Well, I think it's a testament though to the craft beer industry now, that like, even like, say, the most stalwart pubs like around the country now will have at least one or two craft beer taps in the place. Like,
100%.
Like, there's always something, like, you know.
Yeah, but I'd agree with that, because you know me, like, I tour around the whole time doing gigs and whatever. And the amount of places I've gone in and I've seen, like, Metalman or Dungarvan, just even Waterford, never mind what they have in their own kind of locality.
Blackwater gin
is nearly in, like,
everywhere.
I'd say it's about over 70% bars, like, you know what I mean, in Ireland, so.
But, and another great point I'd like to make on that is, the craft beer industry wouldn't survive if they didn't back each other up.
What I've noticed
since doing this podcast is the craft beer industry support each other. Like, every single week, obviously we heavily follow and are linked in with, are heavily follow and are tuned into what Yellow Belly are doing, because we follow Grady's Yard as well, and we on the Snugcast social media accounts, we follow Declan, the head brewer, we follow a couple of the Yellow Belly lads. So every fucking week, Declan was doing a collaboration with someone else. So they had had lads from Liverpool over last week, and then he's in fucking somewhere else this week, and you're just there thinking, like, my God, like, they're actually all backing each other up, and that's the only way that they'll survive against the corporations.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. It's kind of like, I don't want to say that they're in a fight or anything, but they're kind of the underdog in it. Do you know what I mean? They're the smaller company, so why not band together? Do you know what I mean? And be supporting each other and helping to lift each other up, rather than like being a competition for smaller percentages within themselves. Like,
the point that Casey made, I think it's Casey, isn't it?
Yeah.
I forgot her name. Sorry, Casey, if you're listening. The point that Casey made that I think absolutely was on the money was the lack of choice when we were growing up.
Yeah,
no, that's true, absolutely.
And like, Ollie, you're 2021 now. Like, you're coming into your drinking
prime
now.
The next four, five, six years
are your prime.
You will end up with a drink that will sustain you the rest.
But what I was going to put to you was, like, Owen, you grew up in Waterford. At your stage when Ollie's drinking development, let's phrase it that way, you would fillies. Apart from that, there wasn't much else other than the staple being an offer to Waterford at the time.
Like, even like, I wasn't even aware of Phillies because there wasn't as much of a so what Phillies was, like, say at that stage, was Belgian beers, like, because there wasn't the Irish craft brewery industry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was, you know,
the third wave hadn't hit yet. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Whereas, like, say growing up in Cork and being in Cork at that time, you had Franciscan Well, fair enough.
Mm.
But that was it, though. There was nothing else. And even,
and that's
like,
our own place,
yeah.
That, you know.
And even, like, if you saw Rebel Red or Blarney Blonde or something somewhere else, or Shannon Stout, you're somewhere else, you're blown away, like, absolutely blown away. So all you, like, for you growing up now, and now you've got Griffey's Yard, and now you've got Tully's, and now you've got Phillies, and now you've got other, like, as we were talking about Revolution and Tobardo earlier off air, like, they're stocking all the craft beer stuff now. What do you make of it? How would you like to go into a bar and only have Smithwick's, Heineken, Guinness, or
Carlsberg
on tap? And the thing is, you're not guaranteed as good Smithwick's, and you're not guaranteed as good Guinness either.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. It's tough to find kind of the newer and, like, tastier pints like you find here in Grady's Yard. Like, I'm in college in Galway, and I know it's supposed to be a very cultural part of the country, and it is, but at the same time, they serve a lot of tourists, so they have to keep their main four, which would be their Heineken, Guinness, Smithwick's, Carlsberg, kind of like the staples. But of...
You understand that from the pub industry. Like, Nia's brother-in-law runs a Thatched bar in Uchterard in rural Galway. And, for example, like, the stuff he has on tap is the staples.
Yeah.
But, like he said, he has the Galway hooker and stuff like that as well, which is fair enough. But also then, like, I was there with Neil's other brother-in-law. We were up there for a confirmation recently, and he's celiac, so for him, gluten-free beer is the big thing because he can really enjoy that.
Hallow Fekman's ginger beer.
Yeah. Lads, this stuff, I can't remember the name of it, but it's from Nine White Deer, which is brewed in the Gaeltacht in West Cork.
Oh, fantastic.
And Rory was stocking it inside in Powers and Uchterard, and Noel said, he was like, could possibly be the nicest gluten-free beer he's ever had. Nicest gluten-free beer. Like, he said it's amazing. So again, like, in his situation, he has very, very little options, only for the fact that the craft beer industry are providing him with a gluten-free beer that's actually nice and palatable. And, like, that just goes a long way to show that the people marginalised society are being, from a drinking point of view, and it's probably, like, you know, first world problems and all that shit, are actually being provided for by the craft drinks industry.
Well, I'm somewhat marginalised in that. Like, if I say, like, I'm a college student, I might work 15 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, bars, that's what I do in Galway, and, like, 50 that goes to my food for the week, and then another bit then on food when I'm in college or whatever, or whatever that might I might have to keep myself, and after that, like, I might only have 50-60 euro left. Like, that's difficult to get through on craft beer. So,
oh, like,
I go to my student bar in NUIG and it's £3 for a pint of Foster's.
Yeah.
It's hard to look past.
Yeah. Listen, we all do this.
Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone knows what I mean. Like, it's so hard to go.
Get a picture of that,
boy. £9 for a pint of Foster's.
Yeah. Like, but I even say, like, I'm doing the artist life now. Do you know what I mean? And, like, it's not a huge amount of money in it, but I'm getting to do what I love and whatever.
This is news to me.
I'm not doing stand-up anymore.
But the whole thing is, when I go into a pub, I drink Guinness. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel any shame for anyone with the journey,
no.
Because I understand that they're a major corporate brand,
yeah.
And all this kind of stuff, and like there's probably practices that they do that I probably wouldn't particularly agree with. But at the end of the day, it's like I said, I love coming out for and getting like support in a local company and getting the craft line. There's some weeks I just fucking can't, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just
like, I haven't met you in a while, and I actually do really enjoy coming here. I've been here 3 or 4 times with you, and when I come here, it's a lovely break from having.
Like they are very valuable, and it's like the point I made about Arkeen earlier is that like not everyone can afford to do a shop there, and that's a very valid point. But that being said, the people that can should. For the exact reason that it's creating more sustainable jobs.
It's promoting local food.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
it boosts the local economy. So it doesn't matter if it's beer or shopping or local garage or
if it's
a bit of pesto or it's the fella who's going to refit your exhaust
but
for you.
The flip side as well, if everyone shopped in Arkeen rather than Tesco, then the agriculture industry wouldn't have to worry about Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like it goes full loop, and I think this is coming from the trade, and I think the trade was very well made, 90% of it. But I do think there's 10% of that trade that it may be done for creative license and for sensationalism. Maybe I don't know the girl that did it, and she's more than welcome to reply to us and say that that's not what she did.
That's
but there is 10%. But there is 10% that I do kind of, not necessarily disagree, but do think there is a rationalization
for it. There's more context in it. Whereas, like, you know, that was a tweet that she put out, whereas if you sat down and had a conversation with her about
had a few points with Arthur Guinness, tossed it out with him.
But
so
my grandmother always said he was the best doctor Ireland ever had.
As we said, like, Guinness's advertising isn't, obviously, I didn't see most of the advertising before 2005 realistically.
They're leaps and bounds ahead.
Something recently enough that the Irish Blood Transfusion Service has stopped giving out Guinness, like, for iron.
But when was
that's fantastic, Mark.
Yeah.
That is absolutely genius.
It's
by
kind of true, though.
But when was the last time you saw a billboard for Rye River or Yellow Belly or, you know, Blacks Can Sail? But they can't afford that.
Yeah.
And
but that's not Guinness's fault, though.
Like, for like sustainability, right? How many of those, like, say the ones that we have, that there are billboards of now, like say fucking Rockshore or something like that, right? Like
Diageo.
I know it's Diageo, but like
it's like Budweiser, but with extra piss.
Exactly. But like those like
Orange Tab 2018.
Those billboards now, like how many of those can you see in 30, 40 years? Whereas like say Michael Street in Watford, you can still see toucans like walk down there, like, you know.
Well,
that's
exactly it, and actually a great point you made with the Rockshore at the time when it came out was if a drink's been pushed this much, it mustn't be very good. I think the irony of the tweet, and this isn't a criticism of the girl. I think it's some very well made points, and I think the craft beer industry, you know, I'm a huge supporter of it. Everyone that knows me know that. But the irony is, she put a gif of a pouring pint of Guinness in it, and it's got like 150 retweets, 400 likes, and it's actually lovely looking pint.
I remember like working in pubs myself. I remember one time we got new Guinness taps installed, brand new, fresh
not
Guinness glasses,
nice,
but not the ones with the cut in them, the old style
tulips.
And I had lads coming in, they're like, get a pint of Heineken. I was going, you don't want a pint of Heineken. They were like, why? It was a new tap installed, lines totally cleaned out, fresh bars, fresh. This is the freshest pint you'll ever have in your whole life. Right, okay, I give fellas points. And like I said, all they'd ever come in is drink Heineken, Carlsberg, or maybe come in and get like a short or whatever. And I had the whole pub drink this. And it wasn't a thing I was trying to push it, it was just I knew what I had there was going to be a top quality product.
Yeah, and look, a good pint of Guinness is very good.
It's so good,
it is very good.
A good pint of Guinness is so much better than a good pint of Heineken, like, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know.
But that being said, right, I'll put this to y'all. Right, and maybe some of you haven't had these drinks. A great pint of Guinness versus a great pint of Captain Save alone. It's a tough one.
See, so like it is a tough one, right? But it's, I think it's because like I've played so much Prince again over the years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think, yeah, like, so like I think like in terms of taste, yeah, no, sorry, Captain Sable is a better pint than Guinness, right?
Right. Fair enough.
Right. But like,
your mind has been programmed to like Guinness more.
Well, exactly. I think that is a bit it, right? And that, like, I think that, yeah, like, it, like, like the availability, the plowability, everything of Guinness. Like,
we've plowed through a fair bit of Captain Sable like, this winter.
Like, I was over at Cheltenham there, and they had the Guinness Village there, right? And like, I just literally leant on a bar there for 2 days,
giving tips to strangers. Yeah. 16 to 1, she guaranteed to win.
Stop me Ireland in the second.
Smurf, I'll come to you and I'll give you something a bit more mainstream. Mm. The best pint of Beamish you've had versus the best pint of Guinness you've had.
See, half my family's actually from Cork.
Yeah.
So I would.
Same season.
But the problem is, I switched from Murphy's rather than Beamish.
Right.
Because that's what my grandfather drank.
Grand?
So I kind of.
So you're conditioned to the Murphy's. Best pint of Murphy's you've had versus the best pint of Guinness, though.
I'm sorry to say it, but I would go with the Guinness.
No, don't be sorry to say it. Like it's absolutely not. And this isn't Guinness bashing, by the way. This is discussion around a Twitter thread, which interested me.
I mean, like I was saying it. I don't know what we were talking about earlier. Like I started off with my and then I went to cider. Then eventually I got onto Guinness, and then that's kind of what I normally drink.
By the way, this is absolutely terrible planning from a podcast that focuses on beer and stuff like that point of view, because like the stout season is ending, like. But I think it's a very interesting debate, Ollie. I'm going to come at you with, have you ever had a pint of stout better than your best ever pint of Guinness?
No, and I'll tell you,
there's nothing wrong with that,
and I'll tell you why. When I have a pint of Guinness, I consider all the factors involved, which is the atmosphere of the pub.
Yeah. Very, very fair point.
Everything involved with the pint is in. I've been in Spittle and Carrarua, which is an hour west again of Galway City.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, you're
wonderful power of the world.
You're in the shticks, like, and is in Neil O'Reilly, and it's beautiful to see.
You only speak Irish for the foreign listeners there.
Yeah, Simon Kilcoon, if you're listening there. Yeah, they only speak Irish out there, and it's fantastic to order 4 or 5 pints Guinness, and the barrel is underneath the tap.
By the way, 68% of our listeners are outside of Ireland, so.
No way.
Yeah.
Well.
But I do think, no, you're dead right on that. Like,
because I suppose that's the thing for people who don't know as well. Actually, how close barrel is to the tap does actually affect
absolutely.
Because you have a cooling system involved.
Cooling system, and it's a lag time as well between closing hours, and more of it is in the piping as well and stuff.
The closer you can get the barrel to the tap, the better the pint is going to be.
What I'll say is, my best pint of Beamish in Callan's bar in Cork is better than the best pint of Guinness I've ever had. I prefer Beamish to Murphy's, and that's a palate thing, and that's a taste thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But like I go to the Cove, and if I'm in a four for Guinness, I'll have a Guinness there and I'll love it, and there won't be anything nicer. Like, we've put tons of pints of Guinness up on Instagram and Twitter and fucking Facebook because they're lovely, and you're going to the Guinness is my drink in the Cove because it's a good pint of Guinness. If I'm in Cork, I'll go for a Beamish, and again, I don't know, like, this whole thing which was vaguely touched upon in the thing, or was in the replies to this thread, about is Guinness better abroad than in Ireland?
No, it's cash.
No,
or is it better in Ireland than abroad?
It doesn't travel well.
But I'd argue that's true of most beers. I don't think Carlsberg travels well. I've had Carlsberg Copenhagen. Heineken.
If you want
a
holiday in Spain or Portugal or like that, get local beer. Never get anything else.
Guinness only. Like, Dublin brewed Guinness is only UK and Ireland. Whereas the rest is the Caribbean or Africa.
And it's actually the biggest producer of Guinness in the world.
But
African people prefer dark beers, and they don't want them cold either.
Yeah.
So, and that's why the Guinness
And the thing about it is, I don't know, the older generation prefer a Guinness off the shelf than a Guinness from a cold tap or something.
No, the one I always loved in Waterford was you could get off the shelf, if you go to proper, or you can get the cooler, but you can get off the floor as well. Off the floor is when there's a stone floor in the pub, and they leave a crate down on that.
So that's real.
That's proper, proper old school. You very rarely find it. But off the floor is a thing as well.
I'm going to say there was, I can't remember the name of it, there was a Whiplash Nitro Stout over winter. We came into the Stout Porter night here. Mm. There was a Whiplash Nitro Stout that night. I can't remember the fucking
malt
name of it.
Malt one, no?
Yeah. No, not the malt and vanilla one. No, not that one. That was a bit too sweet for me. There was a Whiplash Nitro Stout. It was fucking delicious. And I absolutely loved it. That was up there. Left Hand Nitro, I think. But I just think they're superior quality. And I get 100% much in with the atmosphere and stuff like that. My drinking experience, I don't think, is much better than Phil Ryan's sitting around the snug.
But that's what I'm saying.
Coming
it's,
in here,
it's your personal preference and atmosphere.
Yeah, and that's probably where I'm at in my life. Whereas, like, put that cannon in when everyone's in there and you're in the snug and there's a huge atmosphere going and stuff like that.
Going in the back.
Yeah, pint of Guinness can't beat it. It's an endless debate that you could go on for the week.
God, I love a pint of Guinness.
Oh no, look, it's a very good debate. It's one of and I think the moral of the story is
Guinness would like to sponsor this podcast.
More than welcome.
I think the whole kind of crux, that whole conversation, I mean all the points that we kind of threw into it, and even what Casey talks about in the tweet is it's about sharing it around. Like Guinness is not going anywhere.
No.
It's not going anywhere fast.
And it never will.
But then like spread money around, because once one of them is doing well, then they could head to risk.
Mm. Well, this is what I was going to say.
It's a Robin Hood situation.
The modern society, capitalism and all that. Capitalism is a great idea in a sense, because it's the holidays, anyone can start a business and go in something. But at the same time too, I just think there's room for everyone. Mm-hmm. Genuinely is room for everyone. I think it's a bit like everything. It's not black and white. You can't just say everyone should go craft, because as you've alluded to, not everyone can afford to go craft.
Yeah.
Same with your grocery shopping, not everyone can afford to go to Aldi store, so you have to go to Aldi, Tesco, whatever. That's more than valid. And that's where I might have a slight issue with the shredded tweets, is that it doesn't cater for everyone.
No. Yeah.
It doesn't. And I think
it also boils down to taste as well.
Yeah.
I don't just prefer Heineken.
You're wrong, but fair play to you. and it's that kind of thing, Grant, if you're you can't walk into a bar and judge someone for drinking a Guinness, because it's the ad you want.
No, that's a
so
terrible
as far as I'm concerned, each their own. I enjoy a good Guinness, but I enjoy a Captain's Table, a Midaz, a Whiplash Nitro Stout, a Left Hand Nitro, a lot more, and that's just the way I am, and everyone else is different, and we've all had different opinions, and that's absolutely fine. And thanks a million for the trade, and that has been this week's Snowcast. Smurf, thanks a million for coming on.
Thanks
a million for coming on. Owen, thanks a million for co-hosting, as always.
Smurf,
Joseph, next comedy shows and stuff like that.
I think this was going on Monday. I'll let you know that I'm doing a gig this Saturday. Probably won't get out at the time when you'll be releasing.
We'll tweet it on Facebook.
It'll be a monthly show in Revolution in Waterford. So make sure to get on that. The next Rogue Comedy Club is
13th May.
I'm actually in the Roisin Dove at the end of April on the 30th.
Oh. Roisin, who's in Garlop?
Yes.
No way.
I'll be there.
I'll see you there.
What day is that?
It's on the Tuesday night up there. So I'll be doing my thing. So yeah, come in and see me.
Roisin's so fat.
I've loads of music and all that kind of stuff going on in between. It's the thing of, I've said it recently, I'm the easiest man to find in Waterford.
So if you're listening to this, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and we'll tag the 33rd show, we'll tag them all in it, and just fucking and follow and subscribe to this stuff. It's really good. Thanks a million for everyone. Come on. Thanks a million for the lads for sponsoring us. Really appreciate it, John. Fucking up Waterford, up Craft Brewers, up the Agio for what they do internationally for Ireland, up everyone. Fucking enjoy the ride.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.